is meant for an adult audience.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Listener discretion is advised.
Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Loveline starts now.
Hey everybody, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Tonight, in with us, Lisa Edelstein. You know her from House. She plays House's boss, really.
I do, right? And a doctor. So.
Dr. Lisa Cuddy, is that how you pronounce last name?
Yeah.
And House is Tuesday nights, 9 o'clock on Fox. New episodes begin March 28th.
Yeah, they keep preempting us for some, American Idol. Yeah.
Preempts everything, the Olympics, House, whatever.
And it beats them, too.
Wow. That also, you know her from the West Wing, where you played a call girl.
Yes.
And Ally McBeal.
Where I played a tranny.
You're always playing something interesting.
Yeah.
How was the tranny thing? Now, that's sort of the new thing, is to play a tranny in film and TV.
I was the first.
Yeah, you really carved.
I paved the way.
Cut that path. How was that?
It was great. Mm-hmm. I loved doing it. I was so excited when I got that script because I've actually known a lot of transgenders in my life for some reason.
Give me that book. Give me the altar book. I want to show you some operations they're doing now, too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Male to female or female to male?
Male to female. Well, I've got both in here, but female to male.
Because female to male is not working, I don't think, that well yet.
They're not that happy with it, but there's still plenty of women sort of trying to do that,
yeah.
The female to male stuff.
It would be much easier to become female.
It is. Just
and it looks real. I had a friend who became female. Knew she was a woman since she was 11, became female at 19, and was a very expensive call girl for much of her 20s, and none of her clients ever knew that...
Wow.
She was not originally female.
How do you know this person?
I've known a lot of strange people in my life. Or not strange. She wasn't strange.
Interesting.
Off the beaten path. I like people like that. I like knowing them. I like talking to them. I think it's fascinating. I think it's great to kind of find out what everybody's up to.
So here's what they do. I've been showing this picture to a lot of people lately. If they want to make a penis, this is a forearm, and they put a catheter down the forearm, and they basically just make a penis out of the forearm. Oh, that's not a good picture of it.
Is that the actual penis?
Yeah, that's the fake one.
It's sizable.
Yeah, that's good, right?
I thought they were going to make like thumb size ones.
Where the heck? No, they make it out of your forearms. Why wouldn't they make it out of the forearm? You got to go right on that mic there.
What are the nerve endings made out of from?
I don't think they can really do that much with the nerves. Here we go.
Well, does it get hard?
You'd think they'd have to put a pump in there to get it to do that. But even so, you know, people are happy with these things.
There's some famous,
these nice pictures.
Celebrity pump stories.
Tell us.
Oh, I'd feel bad.
Oh, come on.
It's too gossipy.
You cannot just leave it like that. Give us some initials.
Here we go.
There's how they make it out of the arm.
Wow. I mean, they give you a nice piece of meat to work with.
Right.
That's good.
It doesn't have to get that
but
hard.
What do they make the testicles out of? Just
they probably
implants?
They put some implants in there. I think this is sort of what it looks like here.
Wow. That's actually fairly... I know a lot of guys that wish they had a penis that looked that way.
Maybe you can sort of refer them for some enhancement procedures.
I know some men that look like a forearm down there, and that's...
Oh, okay. I'm just saying. Don't piss us all
scary.
Off. But anyway, I was involved in one of the... I scrubbed in on a penis enhancement surgery for a television program. And what they do is and it's a pretty well-established procedure now. They cut the tendon that holds the penis to the pubic bone, and so it pulls it out about an inch. And they actually have the guys wear a weight around it for a couple of weeks, even a couple of months, I think. Then what they do is they deglove the penis. They pull the skin off the shaft, and they sew in basically what looks like a Pop-Tart. It's cadaver tissue, and then pull it back up like a sock, and now you have your new penis.
But, I mean,
it's good times.
I've seen a penis that literally is... top knuckle of my pinky.
Yes, you got a toenail with a fingernail.
I mean, that's like, there's got to be a name for that. That's actually got to be a disorder.
Microphallus, and that's in
here.
I
mean, you can't even have safe sex with that.
No, you can't have any kind of, right, yeah.
I mean, you can get pregnant.
Right, because it can get in, but that's all you're
going to... It can get around the area.
Right.
It's still going to ejaculate.
Right. It's like splashing semen into the area.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. That's a reason to have that procedure, right?
But is there enough of a shaft of anything there to work with?
I bet they could give another inch or so.
And where are they getting the flesh from the cadaver?
From dead people.
But what part of the body?
I don't know. It looks sort of like a soft tissue. Like, who knows where? I don't know.
Wow.
Buttock or something. But it, I'm not sure the cadaver is signed up to have
functions.
their ass used on somebody's penis necessarily. But
Well, it's being of service. That's a big service to somebody.
And if you're the little guy with the pinky
that,
thing.
That's horrifying. I would be, that's a terrible life to be a boy born that way.
Well, Lisa, what else got coming up for you now? other than small penises and big penises, what else going on in your life? You've got house.
I've got house. Oh, I just did an episode of American Dad, which was so much fun.
I did a couple voices for Family Guy.
Oh,
is that an
the
amazing?
The writers are great.
Is that operation something up there?
Yeah. But apparently it's not going to air until 2007.
I know. They're booking them way
they
out.
Really,
so, they're invested.
They really got to draw fast.
Fox is invested in these guys. but you know, that whole floor that Seth runs is just it's like a factory up there,
it's
right?
It's a machine.
One side is American Dad and the other side is the Family Guy. Did you see that?
I didn't see Family Guy. I got there and Iggy Pop was on the phone, so I was completely distracted by that. Like, oh my God, it's Iggy Pop. And I made them put me on the phone so I could tell Iggy Pop that I used to live in his building in New York and we used to say hi to each other. It was like an idiot. I was an idiot. He went, okay, thanks, bye.
Gotta go now.
So that's great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, American Dad, what else?
That's pretty much it. I can't do anything while I'm doing house.
Did I read that you wrote a musical at one point?
I wrote a musical about AIDS in the late 80s when I was still a kid, actually.
But that's wild, though. I mean, where'd you get your musical training?
I don't have any. I didn't really. I mean, I.
How could you write a musical without knowing music?
I heard it in my head, and I wrote down the lyrics, and then I knew somebody with a computer, and I talked to them, and it was very antiquated compared to now music system. But I described what I was hearing in my head, and he arranged it, and it was a really amazing kind of inspired project. But I had a lot of friends that were just dropping dead really fast, and.
Yeesh.
There was no treatment, and it was really frightening. And
the 80s, and
at the same time, really, what the play was about was much more of an inner thing about what it is that stops us from dealing with this kind of disease, and stops us from looking at it, stops us from protecting ourselves, stops us from using a condom, like all those things that we all suffer from.
What do you think that is, other than denial?
Well, there's denial. Denial is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
It's almost all of it, really. But there's so many forms of it. It can take the form of, oh, but it feels so good, I don't want to stop.
Right.
Oh, but he looks fine and healthy.
Right.
I've known him for years. Right. I'm sure I know everything about this person. Or maybe, cross your fingers, hope not to die. I mean, it's like, I'm too cool for it. The people I know would never have it. I mean, there's a million things that go through our heads. And so that's really what I was kind of... And also I was trying to talk about the people who were denying the disease even existed. Mm. And the kind of right-wing extremists who were happy it existed because it was killing off all the people they didn't like at the time.
People forget about that piece of this history, right?
That's yeah, true. I mean,
that, you
it
heard
was,
a little bit of that.
President Reagan hadn't even said the word yet.
Yeah.
And I knew 100 people that were dead already. Mm. And I was only, 18.
You were living in New York?
I was in New York, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was people that I'd gone to high school with thought it was all made up. They thought it was government hype. They
do you remember the whole crap, that BS that, was it Spin magazine put out? Or some, what magazine?
God.
They had a whole series about how it wasn't caused by HIV. It was all a big conspiracy dreamed up by the Gallo Institute. It was so destructive that they put that.
Well, there
crap
was a lot
there.
Of stuff, whether or not
Bob
it came from chemical
Jr.
engineering, whether
Bob Guccione Jr. was promoting this horrible, just awful stuff.
Ultimately, I kept having to say to people, none of that matters. What matters right now is this disease exists and these people are dying and we have to do something about it. And we have to look at it and we have to love these people and help them.
God, do you remember that?
Yeah, well, it's still going on.
The paranoia?
Africa, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, not the paranoia. People understand this is virus. You get it, you get sick.
Well, it's still a lot of ostracization. I mean,
it's primitive thinking. Yeah, yeah.
That actually kills people in itself because it stops people from educating themselves. And
as usual, humans go towards a moral interpretation of medical problems.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we were talking about before we started, the where God exists within science. And where
before we go too far, let's take some calls. Here's Shoshana. Shoshana, what's happening? You're on Lisa Edelstein.
Hi. Dr. Giroux?
Yeah, Edelstein or Edelstein?
Steen.
Steen, yeah. Yes, Shoshana.
Hi, first of all, saw you in the Olsen Twins movie. Amazing.
I saw you in that, too.
My moment of glory.
Amazing. Second of all, okay, here's the deal. I have a broken boyfriend picker.
Bad compass. All right, got it.
Horrible.
I have one of those.
And I've been in the in and out of rehab for years, and this last boyfriend, I met him at rehab.
That's a bad move right there.
It's not
there.
A great shopping place for a boyfriend.
No, no.
He was fabulous for a while, and then he graduated the program. and also apparently decided he graduated AA and he started drinking again. And that started causing problems for me. And so after a lot of fighting, we broke up.
Okay.
And or I broke up with him. And
are you still sober?
Rico, am I sober?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He went crazy and like was texting me like crazy and like emailing my friends and IMing me all the time. And then he like picked up my dry cleaning from the dry cleaners and held it hostage. Like, we're talking about some crazy sending me presents.
Hey, Shoshana, watch the S word, please.
Oh, sorry.
All right. We got it. Some crazy stuff. He's a watcher to the cashmere sweater is going to get it. Got it. So he was holding the dry cleaning hostage at his house?
What?
At his house? Is that where he held the hostage?
I don't know. I had my dad call him to get him to give it back.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I don't want to talk to him, you know? And then I showed up at a meeting tonight, and he's standing there in the parking lot. He doesn't even go to meetings because he's a drunk. And he's like there in the
parking lot. Oh, my God.
You got to watch your language.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Shana, we can't go on with you. That's going to go out on the air now. So, all right, here's the deal. Bottom line, no new boyfriend until you've been sober a year. And even then, very cautiously. Obviously, you were traumatized growing up. You probably had an abusive alcoholic dad. That's why you're sort of attracted to that kind of guy. And you are going to have to go with guys that are not so super appealing to you. Not super attractive. Because, unfortunately, you have to sort of relinquish that because you know it's broken. That part of you that forms attractions is not working right. You can have some attraction, so it's interesting and fun, but not that, oh, my God, I got to be with that guy. That you know is going to be the abusive a-hole. Don't do that. This is Sandra. What's up, Sandra?
Hi, Dr.
Drew. Hey there. You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Pardon me?
Hi.
Here we go.
Yeah, Dr. Drew, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know any diseases out there that involve the labia minora?
Yeah, lots of them. Labia minora, I think is what that interpretation was, the translation. Yeah, you can get Bartholin cyst, you get cancers, you can get warts, you can get all kinds of things, and that's just tissue.
Okay, because I kind of noticed some tiny little bits of, you can call it a cyst, but that is growing out of a...
Yeah,
do you wax or anything or shave?
No, not at all.
And that's the point is well taken that folliculitis and follicle infections can form in and around more of the skin area, and that can be kind of uncomfortable and funky look and look like an abscess. But Sandra, go have somebody look at it. That it may need to be lanced. Sometimes those Bartholin cysts need to be removed, but more often than not, it's just hot baths, that sort of thing. Ed, what's up, buddy? You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Hi, okay. Basically, my question is just that, I mean, I hear you talking all the time about how, you know, women who have abusive families are attracted to guys who remind them of their father. And my girlfriend, she had just an absolute, she just went through hell when she was a little kid. And I'm just really worried that I'm going to end up turning out like her father was.
Well, the interesting thing about the question is that your girlfriend might try to recreate that dynamic.
Right.
If that's unconsciously, but doesn't necessarily mean that that's who...
It's going to convert you into that.
You are.
And by the way, the abusive guy doesn't worry about that. He just becomes the abusive guy. But there is another sort of... What's that, Ed?
No, I was just laughing at what you said.
There is another version of this, which is when your girlfriend comes off the relationship with the bad guy, she forces herself in with somebody that's a good guy, somebody that she knows she should be with, and then, lo and behold, she'll begin to abuse that guy.
Mm.
She'll go flip from the abuser to the abusee. Mm. Wait, abusee to the abuser. Because it's really a flip side of the same thing. And or if she doesn't go as far as becoming abusive, she will at least sabotage the hell out of this relationship and go off with another bad guy.
Right.
So, Ed, if you're one of these good guys and probably
how do you break
you are,
that cycle then? That's depressing.
Well, it depends how bad it is. Sometimes it's just getting some recovery. Sometimes it's just learning about not responding to those impulses, those attractions. And sometimes you have to get treatment.
Hmm.
All right, Ed?
To help her.
Huh?
Is there something that I'd be able to do to help her?
No. This is now I know you're the good guy. Because the good guys have to rescue and fix. And no, unfortunately, you cannot. You can just be there and kind of watch what happens here. We'll see how it goes down. Carl, what's up, buddy?
Hey, I've been with this girl for about 4 years now, and about 3 nights ago, she suggested we have a threesome. And I asked her why. She said,
"By the way, that's what Ed's girlfriend's going to do after a few months." I got a great idea. No, no big deal. You want to do that too, right? Let's have a threesome.
Did Carl say 30 minutes ago?
No, actually I don't. I don't see why. It's
I don't know what Carl said, Anderson.
I think you didn't say 30 minutes ago.
Did you say she recommended this or came up with this 30 minutes ago?
No, like 3 days ago.
Three days.
Sorry about that.
And I asked her why, and she said she thought it might be fun, but I just don't understand why. I mean,
the same as Ed's girlfriend to sabotage things, cradle chaos, drama where there isn't any, because she can't tolerate closeness.
How old is she?
She's 22. And I'm 24.
She's 22, he's 24. Maybe she just wants to try something out. Maybe she's curious about something she hasn't lived out. I mean, is there a possibility of that?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. But people that just, I'm playing the odds on this show, people that call this show, usually it's because something's going on. And I would be more likely to...
Because there is the argument that she's comfortable with this person enough to try something that she doesn't feel comfortable doing by herself.
Yeah, and yet most people that are in a loving, connected, intimate relationship
don't
with
really
a sex don't need anything else.
Yeah.
And when they want that third thing, and if they were 18 or 17, it'd be, all right, they're kids. But at 22, 24, it's like, all right, what's going on here? Probably she's trying to end this thing, sabotage it. Not necessarily even consciously, but she's going down that... I need some drama, Pat.
And did she want another girl or another guy?
She actually suggested another guy. She said it might be fun.
Yeah. Well.
Which, I mean, you know, that might be true, but I just don't understand. I mean, we have a great relationship. We have a great sex life.
And
that something that you'd be interested in doing? Would you be okay with sharing your girlfriend with another guy?
No, absolutely not. Right. Not even another girl. I'm one of the rare few that doesn't like that.
Right. So did you react sort of intensely to this suggestion?
No, I thought about it. And
you're
I
just thinking about
you know,
it.
No, it's not really, I don't think it'd be something that would be very good.
And how'd she react to that?
She seemed all right with it, but she's the kind of girl that kind of sort of hides her emotions about that kind of thing.
Can you tell us about her history maybe, what happened to her growing up?
Actually, she had a little bit of abandonment. Her dad left her family when she was I think 7 or 8.
Yeah, it just might be getting too close here, Carl. Time to wrap it up. Bring a little chaos in here and just make this thing end if it's not going to end on its own. That's kind of the direction it's going. Chris, what's up?
Hey.
Hey.
am I on?
You're on.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I've been taking Adderall since. Like, I was in kindergarten, and, like, now I'm starting to, like, my eyes are starting to twitch out on me and stuff, and, like, I'm starting to, like, well, not really see things, but, like think I'm seeing things, sort of, like, just, like, shadows weirdly moving.
Are you overusing it?
Huh? No.
Are you taking anything else?
No.
Chris? Come on.
No, I'm serious. Well, I used to smoke pot, but I totally quit now.
When did you stop?
About like maybe 6 months ago.
How much were you smoking?
Oh, I was it's just occasionally.
Okay. Adderall, I suppose it could do this, but it doesn't typically. So
what's Adderall for?
Adderall's a ADD medication. I'm not a huge Adderall fan, but you know, if it's used properly, it can be helpful sometimes for people. Have you addressed this with the doctor that's prescribing the medication?
Yeah. So he just switched me to Adderall XR.
Okay. All right.
But
we'll see. That maybe, you know, ADD sometimes can kind of move over towards Tourette's and those sorts of syndromes of tics and things that
but
people get part
say,
of the biology.
You're seeing things like hallucinating?
Well, not really, but like shadows will weird moving and it'll freak me out, you know? Like, let's say I'm like inside and then I go outside my... I'll start to act weird. But then
Chris, I get that you're having anxiety, maybe even panic, but Adderall is probably not helping that much, but I think that's a separate issue from what you're describing here. You need to keep going back and describing to that doctor what you're experiencing until you get some satisfaction. Crystal, what's up there? You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Hi.
She is Dr. Lisa Cuddy from House.
I
was working on that.
She's so great in it.
See?
Thanks.
You're welcome. I was just wondering, okay, how long can you smoke meth while you're pregnant before it begins to hurt the baby?
None long?
30 seconds.
None long.
A couple friends told me, and I read online, that there's no like defects or anything from meth. It's just that if you're smoking it while when you give birth and in those months prior, that
we're still trying to figure out what it's doing to these babies. There clearly is something going on, but it's less than we had suspected. By the first grade, a lot of these kids are coming out pretty darn good. Not necessarily the same kids they would have been had they not been exposed to methamphetamine. And we really haven't really documented yet the abortions or the miscarriages that occurred, the intrauterine demises or deaths, which I'm sure were plenty from methamphetamine. Obviously, Crystal, not a good thing.
No, okay.
And you could be arrested for child abuse for doing this.
Yeah, but what if you quit before you have the baby?
Well, at what point were you planning to quit? How much are you doing?
Like, I don't know how to measure it. Like, a couple bowls a day?
You're
smoking it?
You're smoking. Your fetus is smoking crank.
Okay, I can't do this. This is a bogus call. I just wanted the movie.
The what?
I don't know.
She doesn't get it.
No. Mm. Okay. Michelle, what's up?
Hi. I've got a question, and it's a problem that I've been having for a while now, for a few years. I'm 21, and I'm wondering how you can tell if you are sexually addicted. Like, when I go out at night, and like if I'm with my boyfriend at a bar or something, any guy who I am attracted to or is a good-looking man, I automatically get sexually attracted to, and I'll find myself dreaming about that person maybe for, like, the next week, even if it's someone I've never even spoke to. I masturbate 2 to 3 times a day.
Okay. Hold on, Michelle. Go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. My boyfriend gets a little irritated with me because after we have sex, I want to keep going. And I can reach a climax maybe 6 times a night, and it starts arguments with us because I just can't help it, but I want more.
He's exhausted.
More.
All right, hold on. Michelle, hold on. I want you to hold on for a second. We got to take a little break here, okay?
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. So happy about that. I want to get into this because it's an interesting call. Lisa Edelstein, you know her as Dr. Lisa Cuddy on House. You also know her from The West Wing and from Ally McBeal and many other things. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. Lisa and I will be right back.
Yep, Loveline will be back.
Glad to hear it.
Loveline will be right back.
Hey everybody, it's Loveline. We're going to finish up with Michelle with her chronic, enthusiasm. Lisa Edelstein is the guest tonight. She is on House. She's House's boss. And her list of appearances just is pretty amazing. Films include What Women Want, Daddy Daycare, As Good As It Gets, TV, Leap of Faith, Seinfeld, Without a Trace, Frasier, ER, Ally McBeal, blah, blah, blah.
The West Wing.
It's just pretty amazing.
Thanks.
It must have been fun to work on all those shows.
It was really fun. I've had a great time and done a really eclectic number of stunts.
You went to NYU? Did you grow up out there?
Yeah, yeah.
I heard you grew up in Boston.
No, I was born in Boston.
And they grew up?
And then I grew up in New Jersey and New York. But I went to NYU for not quite all of the amount of time it would have taken to graduate.
That's a descriptive, euphemistic way of saying it.
Well, I wrote the musical. I dropped out of school and I wrote that musical.
Oh, wow. Instead. Interesting.
Yeah, I just thought I was going to be able to do more outside of school, and I was.
Huh. All right, Michelle, let's finish up here. Why don't you sort of recap the call, if you don't mind, shorthand.
Okay. I believe I'm sexually addicted. I just seem to be turned on by every good-looking man, occasionally women. I'm wet almost all day, masturbate 2 to 3 times a day. Sometimes I'll go into a bathroom stall while I'm at work. Sometimes I'll pass up going out at night so I can just, like, sit home and watch pornos. And I seem to pressure my boyfriend into having sex, like, a million times a week, over-exaggerating, obviously, but more so than he can handle. And he gets annoyed with me, and I know he doesn't understand, and I don't want to push him, but I just can't help it. It's like, I need more. Mm-hmm. I just want to have sex, like, all day long. And it gets annoying because I have dreams about just random good-looking men, and I wake up feeling horny, and I'm only 21. Is this bad?
Well, it's problematic.
I mean, sexual addiction, like in my experience with people who I know who've had it, usually comes from abuse.
Yes.
But then there's also a question of hormones. Do you have a history of being molested or?
No, none at all. But I was wondering if it was a hormonal thing. I am on birth control.
You could have a lot of testosterone.
You could. There is sort of a range of what's, let's call it, normal or commonplace. But, Michelle, you sound a little manic-y to me. Has anybody ever brought up the possibility of bipolar disorder?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Bipolar, manic depression, has that ever been suggested to you?
No, not at all. I rarely ever get mad. I'm not, like, confused person. I'm in college.
Are you a hyper person?
I'm very go-getty and I'm very social.
Do you have the opposite side, like where you suddenly just want to be kind of like silent by yourself for extended periods of time?
No, never like that. I love to be around people and friends. I love to have a good time. I'm outgoing.
Okay, hold on. Michelle, you are hypo. You're a little bit manic-y. We can't even get a word in here.
Oh,
okay, so you are. And whether or not that's the cause of all this hypersexuality, we kind of have to figure out here. Is anyone in your family have manic depression?
Not that I believe maybe my little sister,
who's
16, but that was due to a car accident and she suffered some brain damage.
Okay. And parents,
I don't know if that's genetic or, but the doctors say it's due to the car accident.
Okay. But there is a genetic sort of component to bipolar disorder, but you don't know if your parents or grandparents ever having had that.
No, they definitely didn't.
All right.
I come from the typical normal. I don't know what the standard is for normal.
What normal is, yeah.
And have you ever been addicted to anything?
Cigarettes.
Nothing ever other than that.
Nope, just cigarettes and sex, and that's been since I was about 15. So.
Have you ever had consequences from the sexual behaviors? Have you ever really hurt yourself or put yourself in harm's way?
No, I have not. I have hurt, men in relationships in the past, but nothing.
By cheating.
For myself.
By cheating.
Yes, by cheating. Yes.
And I guess, you know, one of the consequences we'd have to look at right now is it is affecting your relationship currently. And so that sort of qualifies as a consequence.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
And you're sure there's never been any physical or sexual abuse or trauma or chaos in your family, anything early on?
I mean, if there was, I was too young to remember.
Okay.
So, I mean, as far back as I can remember, there's been none.
All right. Well, there's a few. I think you ought to go have an assessment because you're stressed.
You're on birth control pills?
Yeah, I'm on Evra.
Should have eight kids otherwise.
But which kind of hormones are you on?
I have no idea.
It's a combo.
Hormone pills?
It's a patch.
Well, birth control pills is hormone pills.
She's on the patch.
Oh, she's on the patch.
Yeah, I'm just on the patch. And I was wondering if that could affect it because since I was 15, I've been taking, the different kinds, like the NuvaRing and pills. And no matter what, it just seems like I'm raging out of control. Like, I just want to have sex all day long.
Okay, we got
that part.
Got that. Have you ever been on the Depo Provera shot?
No, I haven't.
Because sometimes some women get shut down a little bit by that. That's one possibility. But I think, Michelle, you ought to go have an evaluation by a psychiatrist because there's something going on here. It is causing you distress. Yeah, it may just be you. It may just be sort of a normal spectrum. But it seems like
hormones can make you crazy.
They can, but this seems excessive by almost any measure.
Right.
And it's starting to have real consequences and distressing her. So you have to wonder if something's going on there.
Right.
And if you're for her sake, she might want to look into it. And then talk to a gynecologist
get your hormones tested.
I think so. But we wouldn't want her off birth control.
No.
We just don't want that. Jessica, what's going on? You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hi.
All right, here's the deal. I've been with my boyfriend for 2 years. We got together about a month after he got back from Iraq.
Mm.
And in the last 6 months, his sex drive has completely, disappeared almost.
So he had one to begin with, and it's dropped since he's come back.
Yes.
Does he have post-traumatic stress?
He, in the Army, they do pre-screening for that, and they said that he was fine. And he doesn't show any symptoms or anything like that, so I don't know what's going on with him.
Did he get any funky vaccines or anything they were giving him over there?
The only thing I know of is, malaria pills.
He's not taking that anymore, though, right?
No.
Yeah. And is he happy in the relationship? Does he seem depressed?
Everything is fine, with our relationship and stuff, but his sex drive has just completely disappeared.
Was he seeing actual combat, or was he...
He
was
a gunner on top of the Humvee, so he was in,
all of it.
Isn't there an addiction to adrenaline that happens in those kind of circumstances that's hard
There's all kinds of stuff going on.
I would think so.
Yeah, and he doesn't seem depressed. You know, does he seem distressed about this?
It bothers him. He claims that something's wrong with him and he needs to see a doctor and all this stuff.
Agreed.
It sounds like depression.
Agreed. Something is wrong with him and he does need to see a doctor.
Yeah.
Why hasn't he?
He has no health insurance.
Oh. What about the military?
Because we live in Phoenix, there aren't any army bases.
I like the way Lisa goes.
Yeah. As if we take care of them.
Yeah. Some cities have decent military systems.
What about a free clinic? A lot of free clinics have some counselors.
You know, you have to go to county. Well, it's going to take a lot of work to figure this one out because it may be something biological, too. Mm-hmm. County facilities. Go to a county facility and just sort of throw yourself on the mercy of that system.
Well, he's gained weight since he's been out. Do you think that has something to do with it?
How much?
He's about 6 foot and he weighs 250 pounds.
It could be. You know, some guys are very sensitive to that sort of thing. He may be becoming diabetic, perhaps. That's why he's sort of not well. And there's no doubt that when guys, everyone has their own sort of threshold for this. There's a point at which your body just goes, enough. And one of the things that will start happening is the adipose or fat tissue will begin producing estrogen. Mm. Testosterone levels fall, sex drive falls, get depressed, get all kinds of sleep apnea, all kinds of other things can happen. Diabetes, as I've said. So absolutely, he should be checked out. And I would use, people don't realize county hospitals, every county has county systems and they are, for the most part, pretty good. They're hard to use and they take a lot of time, but they're pretty good. Rich, what's up?
Hey, a couple nights ago, you were talking about the addictive personality DNA test.
Gene, not personality.
The what?
The potential gene for addiction, not addictive personality. There is no addictive personality.
Oh, okay. Well, I was wondering when that's coming out.
I'd heard it's coming out in about 2 months. I would say by summer for sure. It's called the A1 allele test, and the A1 allele, it's not the ideal screen for alcoholism or the potential for addiction. It's a reasonable test.
Right.
There are multiple other genes that are candidate genes that are potentially causing or being responsible
for
alcoholism.
What would be the point of having it?
Yeah, to know how deeply you need to manage your risk, I guess, whether you should have a relationship with alcohol, how to manage your offspring.
Yeah, I mean,
how to manage your offspring, I can understand, but your own behavior, there's so many factors.
I think you're right. I think that people are going to do what they're going to do, whether they know they have the gene.
Well, I don't have the gene, so I guess I can.
Well, there's that, but so many people know they can tell they have the potential. And they go, well, if dad was alcoholic, I'm just smoking pot. What's the big deal?
Right.
And so they have that's that denial we talked about at the beginning of the show. Right. People will rationalize their way into just about anything.
Yeah.
So, but I do think there may be some use to it. It's not a perfect test. Genes account for about 60% of the risk for alcoholism and addiction.
Well, on the web, it said it was about 30% effective.
Well, let me just say, 60% of the time, I shouldn't say it that way, genes are responsible for about 60% of the risk for alcoholism and addiction. So there's gene and environment to get these diseases.
Okay.
This gene is one of the candidate genes. It's been around for a long time. It's not a great one, but it's something that could sort of tip you off maybe.
But what are you looking for when you...
I just wanted to know if I have the gene.
What's going on in your life?
Anything I can get my hands on, alcohol, smoking.
So you have a problem.
Yeah.
So whether or not you have the gene, you have the problem.
I know.
Here's the deal. Do you have a family history of alcoholism?
Yeah.
Okay, you have the gene. That's it. Very simple. Whatever that test shows, you have it. I guarantee it. It doesn't matter. That's what it defines alcoholism.
What matters is your behavior and what's going on in your life.
Right. There's two ways to define addiction. I mean, to determine whether you cross the threshold for addiction. A, do you have a family history? B, are you using the face of consequence? That's it.
And are you trying to find a way out of dealing with this? Like, so if you don't have the gene, then you don't necessarily have to do anything about it?
I mean, I'm
just curious.
Just curious.
Trying to convince yourself into
it. I got eye problems right now, and I mean, I went ahead and got pictures of my retina, so whatever.
What does that have to do with the addiction?
Whatever. That's the main reason why I'm
That is a diagnostic test that you need to know what's going on. You don't need that kind of a diagnostic test to diagnose addiction.
That's the main reason why I'm drinking, is my eyes.
There's always a reason to drink.
Right. I was talking to this guy that lives on the street in my neighborhood, and he told me a great story that somebody had recently offered him a job to drive things, be a driver, and he hasn't driven in 25 years because he's a drinker. And he said the last time he drove, he realized it, what happened was he was with his wife and child in the car, and he came, you know, an inch to hitting a tree. And when that happened, he realized he just had to stop driving. Not that he had to stop drinking.
Right.
He had to stop driving.
And then he realized he needs to leave his wife and child.
Right.
To make
so
sure
that he could keep drinking, right, so it doesn't hurt them anymore.
Right. That is alcoholic thinking. Jose, what's up? You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Oh, my God.
Hey.
First of all, I'd like to say that, Lisa, I love the show.
Thanks.
Dr. Drew, you're a genius, man.
Thanks, buddy. What's going on?
Oh, nothing. I just wanted to talk to Lisa about the show.
Okay.
You have any questions about it?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
How is it like to work with Greg, with House?
With Hugh Laurie?
Yeah.
You've never been asked that question before, have you?
Never. Hugh is amazing. He's a really funny guy and very smart.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Any questions about upcoming shows or other characters?
No, but while I'm at it, I'll ask Dr. Drew. You said the other night that that fat people have kind of an estrogen when they have fat, right?
Yep. I said that a couple minutes ago, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Because I'm a little fat, and I was wondering if I lost weight, like, would my estrogen levels go down?
Yeah. It's a little different at your age, though, Jose. Interestingly, you would bring this up, because there are normally higher levels of estrogen circulating around at 13, 14 for males. In fact, some 13-year-olds will get breast development, actually a little breast bud, because the adrenal glands start producing some stuff. And that's a normal part of development just before the testosterone from the
really
testes
kicks in
and takes over. So
I will lose the estrogen eventually, right?
You will, and you should lose the weight just for your health overall. I wouldn't get focused on it for hormonal reasons right at this age.
Yeah, because...
But I would for overall health reasons, Jose, all right?
Yeah, because I already got hypertension, so I have
to. No. Then you must. How much do you weigh?
154.
How tall are you?
I think 4'9".
Yeah, you could lose a little bit here, buddy.
All right.
What kind of food do you live on?
Well, I used to eat red meat, but the doctor said I have to eat vegetables and fruits now.
Do you?
Right. Yeah, I do.
Real food.
Are you eating lots of fried things and bread and stuff?
No, I had to stop eating it.
Do you have a history of eating that kind of stuff?
Yeah, my mom. Most of my grandparents are kind of fat.
And what kind of food do they eat?
A lot of bread.
Is there some ethnic...
And rice
Is there
and
an
stuff
ethnicity
like
to the food?
Mexican. I'm Mexican, so yeah.
So you got to watch the cheese, the beans, the tortillas, the rice.
It's hard to do.
Carbs and fat.
It's hard to do in a household where culturally that's what people are used to. But it is. It's a big challenge.
The reason humans developed those kinds of dietary habits was because they couldn't get their hands on food.
Right.
And so they had to develop high calorie ways to get food in when it was available.
Right.
Now it's available.
It's everywhere.
And we just have too much.
Are you active? Are you playing sports and stuff?
Yeah, I have to go to the gym.
Good. Well, it sounds like you're doing the right stuff. You're on the right track, Jose.
Yeah.
You're young enough that if you establish some of these sort of lifestyle
patterns,
yeah, it'll be good. It'll stay with you. All right, the phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. This is Lisa Edelstein. You're here with me tonight. She is from the show House. She plays House's boss, Dr. Lisa Cuddy, and you know her from a million other TV shows and movies. I'll list them again when we come back.
No,
from commercial.
Don't.
It's really impressive, some of these. Well, Frasier, ER, The Practice. All right, we're going to take a little break and be right back.
Loveline. We'll be right back.
It's Love Line with Lisa Edelstein.
Nice.
And I'm Greg Brady. Peter Brady. 1-800-LOVE-191. She plays Dr. Lisa Cuddy on the hit show House. As I said, I list some of the other TV shows.
While I cringe.
What women? Oh, the movies. Daddy Daycare, As Good as It Gets, Keeping the Faith. Let's see.
That was my favorite, Keeping the Faith.
You like that?
I had a really funny part in that. Like,
which one were
such
you?
A good time. I was this blind date that Ben Stiller had to go on, and I was an aerobics-obsessed gal from the temple. I made him punch me in the stomach to prove how strong I was.
Who was the other? Was it Ed Norton?
Ed Norton. Edward Norton.
Yeah, that was. I saw it a couple of times actually because it was on planes all the time, and I really liked it.
Yeah, it was
I
a clever film.
That film.
Yeah, it was
yeah,
fun.
It had a great message, I thought.
Yeah, it was really sweet and fun to do. And shooting in New York is so romantic. Mm. And my parents came to visit the set, and they had a good time.
How
it was fun. Nice.
How was Stiller working for him?
Well, I have known Ben since I was on MTV. So I'd known him before.
What did you do for MTV?
I had a horrifyingly bad show on MTV called Awake on the Wild Side. It was really, really traumatizing.
What was it?
It was a morning show from 7 to 11 every day. And
wow.
I was, you know, much heavier and young and dumb and
Ben was on that too.
Ben had the Ben Stiller show, and I had met him. I was like, I had a small part in one of these little things he did with Colin Quinn, and then I went and did some guesting on his show, on the Ben Stiller show.
Oh, fun!
They were just hugely talented. Yeah. Everybody involved in the Ben Stiller show.
That was Janine Garofalo, Ben Stiller.
I don't know if Janine was on it yet. Janine was on it once they went to network, but
oh,
I think at the Ben Stiller show it was him and Jeff Kahn, and I can't remember who else. But yeah, they're amazingly
talented. I'd forgotten that
kids.
That started on MTV.
Yeah.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
All right, let's take some more calls here. This is Donna. What's up, Donna? You're with Lisa Edelstein.
Hi.
Hi.
sorry. My question is, my boyfriend, when we're sleeping, he actually tries to have sex with me while he's asleep.
Good times.
And then, huh?
Nothing.
And, like, when we wake up, he doesn't remember at all. And he didn't actually believe me. And I would tell him, because I always felt kind of used, because it was really kind of quick and rough.
Hmm.
He didn't believe me until he found evidence on him one morning. And now he feels horrible, like a rapist, and our sex life is just dead.
My engineer, Corey, wants to know what the evidence was.
You know, evidence.
Female excretions? Was it? Did you have blood?
Yeah, like some dried blood and some dried semen on him the next morning.
You could have just said Bill Clinton. We would have gotten it.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go, Corey. You satisfied?
It's like CSI.
CSI, right. It's another CSI episode. okay. This is a not uncommon thing. Well, let's say not rare. And it's sort of in the category of night terrors and sleepwalking and this sort of thing. Kind of close to a seizure disorder. Does he have any other problems medically or psychiatrically?
Not that we know of.
All right. And it doesn't have to mean anything bad. And it can be sort of unpleasant. And some people like it and some people don't like it. But it's not something that's unheard of. And it doesn't necessarily mean that, oh my God, there's something wrong, so desperately wrong with my boyfriend. However, I would talk to a sleep specialist if I were you.
And what if you don't have sex with him when he tries to have sex with you in his sleep?
He kind of gets a little insistent, but I got to the point where I just sort of elbow him really hard in the ribs, and he'll roll over, and he'll go right back to sleep, like he's not even awake.
Good. You learned to handle it. Perfect.
I can't sleep with him anymore in the same bed because it got so bad, and it would kind of scare me, and every time he would roll over, I would think, oh, no, it would wake me up. It's one of those times.
That
is scary.
Yeah, it's weird. Take him to a sleep specialist. There are a lot of sleep specialists in every town now. They're usually pulmonologists or neurologists. Probably you want to see a neurologist sleep specialist if you can. And sometimes,
and remember not to take it personally.
Yeah, there are all kinds of funky rages and things that can occur during sleep, and there are actually medications that can help manage that. So here is, I'm trying to get Deanna up. Deanna?
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey, I was wondering, what's it like just like talking to Omar Epps and Jesse Spencer?
Just talking to him. That's all I got to know. How'd you like to talk to him?
Omar is incredibly beautiful. He's such a sexy guy. He's very bright and a real go-getter and a great businessman and a hustler, and he's inspiring in that way. He's always on the move. He's always got something going on. He does music, he writes, he produces. He's pretty impressive. Jesse is adorable, hilarious, funny, really funny, cracks me up, kind of in the way you joke around with your younger brother, or I don't know. I adore him. He's great.
Oh, and I was wondering, does Jesse have that actual accent? Because I don't.
Yes, he really is Australian.
Really? Wow, that's awesome.
Does that make him sexier?
Yes, it does.
I'll tell him you said so.
And I think you're awesome just playing as Cuddy.
Thanks.
I think it's just how you, like, make fun of House and everything. I think it's fun. And
Thanks, Diana. Is there anybody that sort of stand out that you've worked with? Somebody think, oh, my God, that was a great experience. You worked with everybody.
I've worked with a lot of people. I did, like, Keeping the Faith was probably, at that moment in my life, was very exciting because I love working with Ben, and I really admired Edward. God, there have been, and I've gone completely blank as to...
How was James Spader?
He's amazing. Working with James Spader... was so challenging because James Spader can just stare at you and it looks like he's doing the most incredible thing in the world. And right. I just don't feel like I'm that deep. I felt like I had, you know, I was two ounces deep and he was like 16 ounces.
He's thinking about his lunch.
I know, he's just got those eyes.
Right.
So, yeah, but he's amazing. Aaron Sorkin, who wrote West Wing, I was thrilled to work with as much as I got to. He's an amazing writer and a brilliant mind and completely out of his mind at the same time.
Cool.
I love people like that.
Good times.
Yeah.
That's Lisa Edelstein. I'm Dr. Drew. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. You know her from House, and we will be right back.
If you need help,
call Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Everybody, it's Loveline. Lisa Edelstein in here with us tonight. She is from House. She is House's boss. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. on Fox. Let's go directly to phone calls. This is Mary. Hey, Mary, what's going on?
Hi. I've been wondering about this for a while, and since you guys are offering a free DVD tonight for calling, I figured I'd call. Drew, I've heard you talking about squirting before.
Perfect.
Female squirting.
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay.
When I orgasm, fluid comes out. I've seen this movie called Squirters 2, and these girls, they squirt, but mine doesn't squirt out like that. It just comes out, and I've smelled it, and it's not pee.
Good.
So
yes.
I'm wondering if this is squirting, and
yes, it is.
I'm hoping I'm not peeing.
No, I mean, as you sort of... figured out, urine is pretty easy to tell, particularly if you can test it by taking vitamins or eating asparagus before, and you'll know whether that's urine. And at your age, urine incontinence with orgasm is pretty uncommon, unless you've had at least two or three kids. Have you?
I've just had one.
And did you have any trauma to the vagina during delivery?
Yep.
What happened?
They needed to use the stirrups, and they pulled the baby out, and I tore all the way to my rectum. Mm.
Okay. And
it was
I know. Were you squirting before the baby? Squirting.
A little bit. I mean, I did, but not nearly as often.
Okay. It's the same thing, just less frequent.
Exactly.
And
well,
that is something that does happen, is that if you do tend to be an ejaculator, the quality or frequency or, you know, the ease with which that happens can change, both positively and negatively after delivery. Doesn't necessarily mean it's urine. Urine, you know, when you urinate with orgasm, usually it is a huge problem. First of all, you have it when you laugh and sneeze also.
No, I don't do that.
Right. And when you have it with orgasm, it's a lot. It's all over the place. I mean, when I've dealt with patients that have that problem, they're putting down tarps and it's on the floor and it's on everywhere. And the what comes out in a female ejaculation is actually, although it seems like a lot, it's actually a pretty small amount of fluid.
Yeah, it seemed to be about an ounce or 2 ounces.
Okay. Well, I think you're just a talented young lady.
Wonderful. Well, I'm not as talented as the girls on that movie. I don't think I ever played.
No, I don't think you have to, you know, try to measure up to the nonsense that's on these films.
Is it real, what's in those films?
I don't know. I've heard it described. I haven't seen them.
I haven't either.
People always describe it sort of arcing across the room and stuff like that. That makes me
wonder. How do you cast that?
To me, I imagine they're just showing somebody.
But is there
the
actual casting call for that sort of thing?
Imagine. Squirters this way. James, what's up?
Not so much. I just had a question about fetishes.
All right.
You there?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I've had this foot fetish and, like, stockings, nylons, lingerie fetish, like, pretty much, like, my whole life. And, like, I always find it hard to tell, like,
James.
My girlfriend or the person I'm dating.
James.
about them and
James.
Yeah.
Would you pick up the receiver, please?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're on the receiver? It still sounds like you're on the speakerphone.
Oh, no, I'm on the receiver.
Okay. Mm.
He's in a female bathroom trying to check out feet under the stall.
Okay. So,
so
you're
afraid to tell people about your foot fetish?
Yeah. It's, I always find it hard to tell people, and I'm always like afraid of their reaction.
He's a liar,
now,
too.
Now yeah, now you're on the headset. Thank you. That is a common thing, people with fetishes, that they tend to feel a certain degree of shame and guilt and embarrassment about it. And sometimes they're so weird, you know, of course you would. But the foot and the lingerie and that kind of thing is pretty common, and most people are able to sort of
talk about it. Offensive. It's not like you're asking somebody to put a teddy bear outfit on.
Right. You're not exploiting them or you're asking them to do anything shameful. It's kind of, it feels a little diminutive, or like there's something that's being gratified that maybe isn't all that healthy, and it sort of feels funny to expose that. And in fact, we really don't know fully where fetishes come from. There are various theories about that. My own belief is that it's just a certain biological phenomenon that gets wired in at a certain time. If the proper sort of stimulus is exposed to the proper genetic environment at the proper time, pow, you get this thing sort of wired in.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, but to have a really, what amazes me about fetishism is when it's a really strange, kind of awkward, complicated fetish that people manage to find each other.
Oh, that's even weirder.
I think the internet helps that.
Yes, it sure does. But, you know, the human is, you and I just haven't talked about this tonight, but I talk about it all the time in the show, which is that things that cause overwhelming feelings in childhood, particularly terror, become sources of attraction after puberty. They call it repetition compulsion. There's various names for it. But if you are sexually abused, you talked about earlier about the sexual addiction, you become sexually addictive and you start being compulsive with guys that are abusive. Or you become a stripper or you become a prostitute and you sort of enlist guys in this repetition of the original trauma of being exploited by men. And the same thing is with fetishes. Something sort of overwhelms you at a time when you're a little kid and you're down at sort of foot level, and all of a sudden feet become very attractive. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
And
some people would argue that it's just sort of a feeling about mom. I just wonder if something maybe isn't sort of happening at that point that is a little more intense and traumatizing.
But ultimately, at this point, at this stage, it doesn't matter. He's got a foot fetish.
He's got it. Doesn't hurt anybody. Enjoy.
Right.
There you go. Tom, what's up?
Oh, hi, Dr. Drew.
Hey, Tom.
I have a little bit of a problem with me and the girl I've been seeing for 3 years. I mean, we've been seeing each other on and off for 3 years, and when we're off, we're off. Like, we go out and we date other people, and, you know, we have our sexual experiences, and, you know, it's been really weird, because I go out and I have a sexual experience, and it doesn't go as fast as it does with my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Can being with a certain person cause you to have premature ejaculation?
The anxiety can...
Well, the simple answer is yes. In the simple way of thinking about it, though this isn't necessarily always what causes it, is that you're just sort of in a groove together and you kind of have worked things out where you can get that part done more quickly and easily.
Yeah,
but you're saying it happens before you want it to.
Yeah, like, I mean, she does orgasm when we do have sex, but I want her to orgasm while we're having sex, not, you know, having to, like, oh, baby, you know, I'm sorry about this, but now, you know, I'll go oral.
Right.
Is she able to have an orgasm with intercourse? Do you know?
Yes, she is, but she has to masturbate while she does it.
With intercourse?
Yes.
So she can have vaginal orgasm?
Yes.
Does she prefer to have an orgasm with oral sex?
No.
Have you ever asked her that?
Yes, I have. Like, we've talked about it, and, like, we sat down, and, like, she... It's something about it. It's just, like, I come too quickly, and it just...
But when, like, you're with people that you don't know as well, you can take your time.
Yeah, it doesn't, like... I mean, I've not been with very many girls. I'll admit that straight from the start. But, I mean, it's like... When we're having sex, it just happens so quickly that it's like, okay, now I feel like I'm disappointing her, and it's really, you know, it's hurting, you know, our relationship and me inside.
Really? She tells you she's unhappy?
No, she doesn't.
Then how's it hurting your relationship?
Well, because, again, we've been going on, out, on and off for like...
No. It's hurting because you're obsessing about this. You're obsessing. You've decided this is what she has to have to be happy, even though the reality is she's fine orgasming with oral sex.
Okay.
That's what I'm hearing here. She's not unhappy. She doesn't complain. You're obsessing and thinking about it and talking about it.
Or the relationship has other issues and you're blaming...
This issue for it. Yes.
Yeah, this quick ejaculation as the reason that you keep breaking up.
As a woman, is that a big issue? It can be for some women.
If it happens all the time, yeah. If your sex life is constantly disrupted like that, like where you can't really have a nice long period of time where you're intimate that way, it can be frustrating. But it's not the reason to end a relationship. Usually there's something else.
Well, I'm not thinking about ending it. I mean,
if that's what you think, keep stopping and starting this on and off relationship that you're having with this person.
It just seems like, it seems like a bigger problem, I guess, to me. You know, I want to be able to, you know, please her without having, you know, like...
Well, then can you learn how to stop? Like, literally make her stop or you stop before you...
It won't...
You can't.
No, guys, his got a clock. Really, what you have to do is just you have to be able to orgasm more than once.
Mm.
You have to have You have to get your chamber cleared out even before you get into action with her.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. Just so get control over your sexuality and find some means to. But I don't. You know, do you understand, Tom? Most women don't have an orgasm with intercourse. Do you understand that?
Yeah. I've heard that listening to your show a couple times.
Yes, most women. And so it's not a deal breaker for most women. Now, your girlfriend happens to be someone that's capable of having one with orgasm with intercourse, which is a relatively small percentage. And she may want to do that, but she may not. You may be obsessing about this. And Lisa brought it up. She would, for her, it's important. She'd prefer to. And she may be one of those people. Women are very different one from another. Don't make assumptions about what she's experiencing. You need to discuss it with her and then kind of work it out. This is Nate. What's up, Nate?
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, Nate.
I love your show. You're pretty cool.
Thanks. Or Dr. Drew's show.
Both shows.
Show, exactly. Mm-hmm. You guys are both pretty cool. When on the house show, me and my family, we all get together, we sit down, we watch your show, we all really like it.
Oh, that's nice.
We really like the actors and all you people. You're really cool.
All right, Nate. Thanks for your call. Woo! What's up, Mancy? Mancy or Nancy? Hi, what's going on? You're on the air. It's Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew. This is Lisa Edelstein with us.
Hi.
Hi. I have a couple questions. A while back, like when I first started having sex, like I could not really get into it unless I thought about like really gruesome crap. And I don't know why. Unless I thought about blood or something, or somebody being cut or stuff like that.
It used to be that way, or it is that way currently?
It is that way still.
Say, I'm not sure I got my head around this. When you're sexually active, you have to think that way?
Yeah.
So when you're having sex, what gets you excited
is... You're 15. How much sex are you having?
I don't know.
How old were you when you started having sex?
14.
Were you ever raped or sexually abused prior to that?
I don't think it's called sexual abuse, but when me and my brother were little, he would like touch me and stuff.
Yes, that's called sexual abuse. And that's really rather serious sexual abuse too, because it's also incest.
But I don't think he meant to, because he was only 4 years older than me.
It doesn't matter. Somebody got to him, and he got to you. And it can affect you profoundly. So, have you had any treatment for this?
Not for that, but, like, I've talked about it with counselors and stuff, and it doesn't really help me.
And we also have to remember that you came from a family where this kind of stuff was going on, so there must have been a lot of chaos growing up also, right?
Yeah. Okay. My dad, like, walked She's out
still on growing up.
Yeah.
And we got moved around a lot.
Okay. First and foremost, stop having sex. It's a bad idea for you right now. That your body's reacting to it. These feelings you have and these things that are evoked, these violent images and all, that's not a good and healthy sign. Right, that's not what you're supposed to feel like when you're having sex.
Right. Because it's violence. You're experiencing violence on yourself. You're attacking yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. And then slow down. Take it easy. Keep talking to the therapist. But no sex for a while. No drugs, no alcohol, no sex. Just kind of just take it slow and easy. Every impulse you have right now is going to be towards chaos. Avoid that.
And then my other question is, I was a big cutter, and I quit doing that because I was going to get put away, and now I'm starting to do air duster.
What's that? Inhalants?
Yeah.
Yeah, that destroys the front part of your brain. So
it lobotomizes you.
Right. So in a few years, you can sit in a wheelchair and look out the window.
And you'll be very calm.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So, Mancy, come on. This is bad. Is it? Do you have an adult you can trust, you can talk to about all this?
Not really.
Are you going to school?
I go to school, but I don't know. I hate school. It's like, I don't know. It's like when I don't. I want to cut so bad, but I don't want to get put away. And when I don't cut, I feel really, really even more depressed.
But maybe you shouldn't look at it as getting put away. I just think of it in terms of getting treatment and going, doing what you need to do.
It might actually make you feel better. It might actually give you somebody you can trust to talk to.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess.
That really is what you need, Mancy. This is a really serious situation. You're going to get hurt. You're on the launching pad of life, and I'm my crystal ball. It's sitting here right now.
I mean, I wonder, you tell her not to have sex. She's doing everything is compulsive. I don't know if she can actually say no.
I'm seeing the trajectory of her life, and it's going to end up splashing in the Pacific Ocean very soon. Emma, what's up there?
Hi. Sorry, throat. I have a question. Okay, well, a few weeks ago, me and my ex, we got together, and I ended up getting really drunk. So we got a hotel room. We were both pretty wasted. And that night, I woke up the next morning. After a certain point, I don't remember anything. So he was telling me all about, this, the crazy circus sex we were having. And, we just had, apparently, I was great. And we did all sorts of things for, 5 hours. And I don't remember any of it. So my question is, how do you, how are you able to perform, without, consciously, knowing it? I mean, was I,
You are conscious. You know what I'm saying? Blacking out from drinking is not that you're unconscious. That's passing out. Blacking out means you are awake, processing normally, but not able to, so you're your usual self, behaving in your usual manner, drunk, but unable to put information into long-term memory. So it doesn't stay with you.
It's a bad idea.
It's a bad thing. It's not a good thing for your brain. But it doesn't mean that in the state that you're in while you're walking around in your life behaving, anybody can tell you're different than normal other than intoxicated.
Well, because apparently I was all not just slurring, but I couldn't even walk. I was all walking all wobbly. So how am I able to perform in such a great manner, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you had no inhibitions. Right. You had no inhibitions. There was none of the rules that you live by applied in the moment.
It's just how great guys are. As long as you're there and they can sort of pull you around, they're fine.
then you're amazing.
You're amazing. What's that, Emma? What?
He felt so bad the next day. He's like, I turned around. I was like, what happened? He's like, you're kidding me. And I was like,
what did you do?
No. Well. What do you mean? Well, I just had amazing sex, and I know he wasn't, because I'm pretty kinky, I'm, into the whole, S&M and, hard sex and just, choking and, spanking and all that stuff. So, I guess he got into it because I had all these I had bruises on my neck and, all over the place. And
oh, boy.
He was like, yeah, it was pretty crazy. And I was like, well, that's good, Sucks that I don't remember it. But you know how sometimes, the next day, though, you have, you remember bits and pieces of it?
Yeah.
Nothing came back to me. And I don't know why, because I know sometimes I've gotten drunk and the next day I remember it.
Again, my crystal ball has been sitting here dormant most of the night. But I'm looking again, and I'm seeing a lot of alcohol in your future.
Yeah, maybe not so much the drinking anymore. When you're actually a blackout drunk...
That's alcoholism.
It's a really bad sign
that's
in terms of your relationship with alcohol.
Uh-huh. It is. And there will be more and more serious things as you go along.
People who aren't alcoholics don't ever have a blackout drunk.
For the most part, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, you don't accidentally drink so much that you black out.
Right.
But here's the weird thing. I only drink when I go out. Like, I don't, like, sit at home and drink. And I rarely go out because, I mean, I go to school, like, and I, you know, I work, so I don't have time during the week. So maybe I just overcompensate on the weekends and I'm just
What's your ethnic background? Where are your ancestors from?
Well, European and Hispanic.
Any North American Indian, anything like that in there?
Not that I know of, but, you know, Hispanic probably.
Possibly.
There's Indian in that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just not an accident. And just because right now you're managing to just drink on the weekends, that's still actually a lot of drinking.
And as with everybody most people with alcoholism and addiction, for long periods of time, it looks like no big deal. I'm controlling it.
It looks like everybody else is doing.
Right.
Except other people who drink on the weekends
don't black out. And wake up with bruises on their neck.
That especially.
Yeah, but I mean, even if I was, like, sober, I'd still, you know, bruises.
Well, that's a whole other issue.
Right.
This is why you want to get beaten up when you're having sex with somebody. But probably the drinking needs to stop first before you'll ever really understand the rest of it.
Right. And the arousal that you need with sex is part of that arousal and thrill that your addictive biology thrives on. Uh-huh. It all kind of goes together. Although, God knows what happened to you growing up in terms of being beaten or anything or smacked around a little bit.
The hard part about all of that is if that's what arouses somebody.
How do you get that out of your system?
How do you get that out of your system?
It's very hard. That's what I was saying. It wires it in.
I'm never going to have that experience.
When your parents smack you around when you're growing up and it creates very intense experiences that are on the order of terror, that becomes extremely attractive and appealing. And some people theorize you kind of burn out the arousal systems, that in order to feel aroused, you have to have that high level of stimulation or to even be sexual. And when the whole addictive biology settles down, oftentimes, a lot of that stuff is less appealing.
Right. Uh-huh. So the change comes on a very subtle level, and then eventually the more obvious things are changing without your...
Unfortunately, Emma's in...
She's not there yet.
Not there yet. She's not ready for that. But just remember these words someday, please, my dear, okay?
But the big thing, the elephant in the room is probably the drinking. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you guys so much.
All right.
I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck.
Bye.
She's going to go on about her...
it's going to be another 10 years.
Oh, my crystal ball. Oh,
yeah.
That was jumping off the table. What 10 years? Carrie, what's up there, my dear?
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're on with Lisa Edelstein from House.
Hi.
Tuesday, cool. 9 o'clock,
Hi.
Fox. Yeah.
Hi.
Preempted by American Idol.
I was wondering, do guys prefer if girls shave down there, like their pubic hair?
Some.
You mean shave off?
Yeah.
Some guys like it bare. Some guys like it hairy. Every man is different.
I think most guys, though, are interested in just groomed.
Groomed.
Yeah. Not anything unnatural.
One of my friends was married, and her husband insisted that she never do anything. And it was horrible for her because she couldn't wear a bathing suit because she happened to be quite hairy. But, other men don't want any sign that there was ever pubic hair in the area ever in your life.
You're right. But for the most part,
there's a middle ground.
That middle zone is mostly about grooming and less about the extreme, for the most part. Wow. Lisa Edelstein,
give me some
grooming techniques tonight. Some tips about self-care. I read Joel McHale up here the other night.
Fantastic Pubes.
Yes, he decided he wanted to work at a new hair salon called Fantastic Pubes.
Because he had a certain opinion of how things should
just
be.
Well, the caller needed some help, and so he just told her to go on down to Fantastic Pubes, and they'd take care of everything for her. All right, Lisa Edelstein from House. It's Tuesday night, 9 o'clock on Fox. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. We're going to take a little break. Be right back.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody now.
Yes, I will be right back.
Loveline will be right back.
Hey, Everybody, it's Loveline, 1-800-L-O-V-E-1.
You know, I have to just say, because I neglected to say this
That's
before.
That's Lisa Edelstein from House.
Hi,
yes.
How are you? You know, you asked me who amazing that I worked
yes.
with.
Yes.
And I neglected to say anybody that I was working with currently.
You had said, you had mentioned it earlier in a different call, how much you enjoyed working
right.
with.
Right. I just want to clarify for those that are listening over at House that I am deeply enamored with everyone that I'm working with and impressed with their talents.
You've said that.
Okay,
you said
good.
That. They missed that call, but you said that. Let's talk to Jennifer. What's up, Jennifer?
Not much. How are you?
We're good. You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Hi.
Hi. I was just...
Hi.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm a little bit worried about my sex drive. Uh-huh. I only want sex about like 2 or 3 times a month with my boyfriend, and he wants it all the time. And I'm just wondering if, because we're at different stages in our life as far as he's still living at home and I'm obviously not, if that could explain it at all, or if that's just kind of some kind of weird blacked out theory, or what you think about that.
I don't see what that has anything to do with it.
As far as I've heard, it just has something to do with it because they are kind of... you're not at the same stage. They're kind of still in like the younger person stage and you're kind of you're not, I don't know. So no,
as if he's able to, achieve some success, wow. Very often a male's hormone levels, testosterone levels will actually go up and his sex drive will increase. Mm-hmm. So absolutely not. I think it has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
What's going on here is that this is this guy's rhythm. He needs to have sex every day or something, and you're not that into it. And the fact that you're not into it, you do not sound enthusiastic about this relationship. And for women, they start to feel objectified and pushing away, and that makes him feel even more desperate and push harder and makes you feel worse.
Maybe there's an incompatibility there. I mean, is it possible that sexually they're incompatible if one has a certain kind of drive and the other doesn't?
That can be the case, but I'm seeing way more here, which is she's describing him disparaging. He's a different stage of life. He's staying at home. He's probably just a loser, but thinking about sex all the time. And I'm on with I'm living my life ahead, and I'm just not into this thing. And all these negatives about this relationship. How long have you been in this relationship?
About 2 years.
Maybe you just don't know how to end a relationship. Maybe this thing's kind of wrapping up. The fact that you're not that into it, maybe not, but it's sort of suspicious that things might be kind of winding down.
Oh, well, I was just thinking that it might be because of stress. I mean, we're both in graduate school and whatnot, and but I wasn't, I don't know.
Were you compatible that way when you got together?
Yeah.
In terms of the rhythm of how much you wanted to be together?
Yes. Yes.
So a lot of times that changes when something emotional is going on. Yeah.
For women especially.
Yeah, for women especially.
Okay.
What's going on?
Well, I mean, as far as emotional stuff, just a lot of deaths in the family and whatnot.
Well, that's a lot. Deaths in the family is a lot. You have to deal with your own grief, and it's hard to be outwardly expressive, and into somebody when you're going through something that you have to process.
And you don't seem to want to look at this relationship, by the way. You just don't even want to talk about it. Just boom, dismiss it. Well, that's off the table.
Well, it's just like things that probably, I don't know if they would normally bother someone there, kind of get really annoying really easily.
That's a sign that the relationship is not doing so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of wrapping up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Unless you want to work on it.
Unless you're committed for some reason, you have a child or something, you want to go get some treatment, try to figure out what's going on, that's reasonable.
Well, it's also reasonable just to figure out what's going on anyway.
But so 20, if people in their 20s, they just move on. It's kind of silly, but whatever. What are you studying in graduate school?
Physical therapy.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? I mean, am I completely off base here, Jennifer?
I just feel like as far as everything else goes, I mean, friendship-wise and...
it'd be too much to lose this, too.
We like all the same things. We can talk about anything. It's just the sex part that's just not really...
Your body's telling you something, Jennifer. Unless there's some trauma history or some other reason why you'd have difficulty maintaining closeness with someone, it may be just that this thing's wrapping up and the body tells you what's going on.
All right.
Okay.
It's the first place where the symptoms show up. Right. It's in the bedroom.
Right. And you can either pay attention to them or not. But if you don't, the caveat emptor, there will be a day. Okay?
Right, because, I mean, other relationships have been kind of a little more exciting in that department, but I just was kind of wondering, because the other relationships were kind of not, like, the guys were jerks. And this guy is not a jerk. And
I get it, and that's one of the things I pointed out to you is that you may have difficulty in closeness. This may be a real relationship, and that may be tough for you to be in a real relationship, and you may just sort of have to throw a wrench in it and sabotage it because it's getting too close.
Right.
That's the other possibility.
But if a part of you is saying this is an important enough relationship, if it's important enough even on the level that you want to learn more about yourself and try to work through this to figure out more about yourself, then it's worth committing to exploring what's going on.
Don't make any huge decisions impulsively, yeah. That's for sure. Lydia, what's going on there?
Hi. I actually had a question about... Okay. I have to smell fingernail polish, and it's almost like I crave it, and yeah, I actually went to the doctor.
It will get you high.
Well,
you
I
an,
know
you get an opioid. You get an opioid reaction to it. Are you an addict to other things?
Well, the thing about it is, it's almost like when I smell it. I mean, it's like I'm craving it. Like my body's.
Have you been addicted to other? Stop your crazy thinking about this. Have you been addicted to other things?
I smoke cigarettes. That's about it.
How much of this do you inhale? This solvent. You understand people get addicted to inhaling solvents because it has a very powerful opioid effect.
Okay.
And it's not, you're going down this path, though. I crave it. I need it like food. Are you kidding? Are you high right now? Of course you are. But,
no, actually, I'm not high right now. I just got off work, so.
Yeah, you're addicted to inhalants.
I've actually gone and I've talked to my doctor, my family doctor, mm-hmm. and I've told him, I'm like, you know, I crave, you know, the smell of fingernail polish. Is mm-hmm. that normal? And he said something about it maybe I'm missing, like, some type of iron or something in my body.
Yeah, there's something called, I knew he was going to go there. There's something called pica syndrome, which is when you get severely iron deficient, you will want to chew ice, eat ashes, chew clay, and have various other unusual impulses.
Eat dirt? Oh, yeah.
It's sort of eating dirt, chewing ashes, chewing ice. I'm sure he checked your iron level. If you don't have severe iron deficiency, you don't have the pica syndrome.
I was in 100 years of solitude.
Oh, really?
Was yeah.
But believe me, I deal with people that inhale, huff a lot of stuff, and it gets some momentum going for some people. So,
well, I don't like being, you know, having to do that. It's like...
My heroin addicts don't want to use needles and put them in their arm either. So, you got to do something about that. This is Brandon. What's up, Brandon?
Hi, Dr. Drew?
Yeah, buddy.
Holy crap, I'm on Loveline.
Yeah, dude,
yeah,
you are.
Okay,
I've got some guidelines that I think the last name of every Jewish person in America starts falls under. And
okay.
I was wondering if people, like, if they're, like, Jewish and their last name doesn't have that in them, if they could call up and say what their last name is, because I'm trying to, like, make them, like, perfect.
What are the guidelines? What are you talking about?
Guidelines, the name has to either start in S, B, Z, or, yeah, S, B, and Z, and R. Or it has the words gold or black in it, or it's it ends in steen, stein, it's, ski, man.
The thing is that Jewish names are sound similar because I think about 500 years ago when Jews weren't allowed to be citizens anywhere and they couldn't own land and. They just could do business and trade. They had jobs like the Vatican actually would hire Jews to change gold to coin because it was a sin for a Catholic to do it. You know, these are the kinds of things that the way that Jews
right.
were living. But
Stein was like house. It became gold house.
Well, what happened was that they had no last names, but the governments wanted to start taxing these people who weren't citizens. So they were given names. And that's
and
why the names were all Germanic and they all sound similar.
And then when they came to Ellis Island,
a lot of them got changed.
Did it again here. So
yeah, and a lot of those names actually got changed, so you won't have that. That rules won't necessarily apply.
I just want to know if my call screeners were sniffing nail polish tonight.
That's a very odd call.
I'm just curious.
For Loveline.
You guys, Anderson, is that you? Were you cracked tonight?
No, I
nail
enjoy
polish?
It,
Okay, good. Excellent. Good. Okay.
It's nice to hear a little buddy in a Nazi guy.
I know. It's great. It's great.
He's just curious.
I've had my horns removed since that.
Drina, what's up?
Hi.
Hi.
I have kind of a major problem with my boyfriend.
All right.
See, I am 13 years old, but my boyfriend is 16, and he's kind of having problems and being in gangs and stuff. And, well, a couple months back, he had to go get in this fight because, well, he had gotten stabbed in the arm twice with a pocket knife. And, yeah, it was pretty major. He had to end up going to the hospital.
Okay, what can we do for you? What do you need from us tonight?
Well, he's in major trouble with them because they keep trying to sneak into his house at night.
The gang?
He now has the cops monitoring his house and his phone calls. And, well, he's got a lot of crap going
on. Does his last name end with Berg?
No.
Gold, Black, Stein. And what is it you'd like from us tonight?
I would like to know if I should stay with him because he's got a lot of problems to work with.
A lot of chaos there.
Yeah, why'd you choose him in the first place?
Well, we are very close, and he's very sweet, and he's not like a lot of people. Seriously, he isn't.
Well, let me just tell you that this, how old is he?
16.
Yeah, this is a nearly adult young man who is a criminal who's behaving in very violent, chaotic, unpredictable ways. Who you look at and say, oh, no, I have a special understanding of him. He's beautiful. I see that little child with him.
I know why he's doing this.
Yes.
It's not what he means.
Drina, total BS. That's how people get in horribly destructive codependent relationships. Right, Lisa?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
I see Lisa going, whoa.
Yep.
And maybe not that bad for Lisa. But that, Drina, you're really painting the picture here of something extremely unhappy. Tell her. Lisa, please.
The hard part is that you are attracted to this person.
Yes.
And it's really hard to tell somebody that it's the wrong person when it feels so right.
But you've got to be realistic about who the individual actually is, not your idealized perceptions of this special person with the special understanding.
Yeah, you have to get out of the fantasy thing.
That is nonsense. Unfortunately, you're 13.
It might not change your feelings for the person, but you have to at least acknowledge what the truth is.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take another break.
She's 13.
I know, with a 17-year-old criminal. It's good times. Good times.
Good times.
That's Lisa Edelstein. She is Dr. Lisa Cuddy, and she is on the hit series Fox. It airs Tuesday,
hit
9
series
o'clock.
House on Fox. But
Jesus, I am tired.
Yeah.
It's like you can't tell. Hit
nail
series
polish?
House.
Nail polish?
Maybe that would help me because I'm in bad shape right now. Lisa's been on multiple other shows. I've listed them earlier and I embarrass her. But her favorite was Keeping the Faith with Ben Stiller. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. We'll be right back.
This is Loveline.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Lisa Edelstein from House. Tuesday, 9 p.m., Fox. Got that right this time. She plays Lisa Cuddy. And we're just talking about good times.
Good times.
Poor Lisa. Am I traumatizing you tonight?
No, I'm having a good time.
All right, good. Doing a good job.
I really am.
All right, Brian, what's up? You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I have a quick question for you, Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
First of all, I should probably preface my call by saying I'm an insulin-dependent diabetic.
Since how? For how long?
For 19 years.
Oh, my. Since you were 4. Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. And for about a period of, I don't know, 2-3 years maybe, not constantly, but I every once in a while had these dreams where I can picture, like, my room, basically, where I'm laying in my bed. But I can't move any part of my body.
Do you open your eyes?
In the dream, I can see, but no, not in reality.
All right. Those, you may actually even be opening your eyes. Those are called night terrors.
Okay.
Yeah, we were frozen. And it's funny, people will insist that some spirit is lying on top of them, that there's somebody, some, you know, ghost is coming.
I've had that too. Yeah.
It's so vivid, the biological, it's basically a seizure. The experience is so intense that it's hard to convince people out of the fact. And yet we can see the seizure activity in the brain waves.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's a seizure.
Seizure-like phenomenon. And well, in your case, I worry you're having hypoglycemic reactions during the night.
See, because I've tested myself afterward because I wanted to see if there was any correlation between the two, and my blood sugar is normal when that happens.
It's not high.
I'm sorry.
It's not high.
Not really, no.
Because again, you might be having a Somogyi reaction, and when you kind of come to, you're on the upswing. Then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is there a way you could get? Well, you know, what if you start your diabetologist about maybe monitoring yourself every couple hours through the night just to see if there are wide fluctuations?
Okay.
Because I worry about that. Obviously, hypoglycemia, you know, diabetics worry about keeping their sugar tightly controlled and not high. But actually, low blood sugar is what can be terribly, terribly dangerous for your brain. I mean, a few hours of that can really hurt you. Do you have any other medical problems?
No, I don't.
When you were adolescent, did you continue to maintain control of your blood sugar?
Yes, I did.
So you haven't had periods of ketoacidosis or long periods of lack of control?
No.
Okay. So no, I'm on an
insulin pump right now, so it keeps me pretty level.
Yeah, that'd be my first concern, would make sure these aren't hypoglycemic episodes, okay?
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
All right. This is Alex. Alex, what's up? You're on with Lisa Edelstein.
Hi. I had a question about dating and why I maybe keep running into the wrong type of guys.
Oh, here
we
go.
We have a lot of that
tonight. Got a theme going tonight. We either have sex addicts or people that are attracted to the wrong kind of people. That's so great.
Well, I mean, like, I'm not addicted to sex or anything.
But you're just addicted to the wrong kind of guy.
Right. We have one of the other kinds of calls tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Like,
they're so interesting, aren't they? Those guys? They're so sexy.
Like, I just started dating when I was 19. Like, before then, I didn't think I was really pretty, but I got over that, and I saw a counselor, and, you know, my self-esteem is better now.
Great.
And I moved to Los Angeles to go to art school, and every, I guess, relationship I've been trying to get into, I've been just meeting jerks who, you know, kind of lead me on, and then later on I find out that they have a girlfriend or, you know, they just want me for sex or something like that. And
we get the picture.
Something I'm doing, or how to get over that.
Well, it's something that you're doing in the sense that these are the kind of guys you're attracted to. So you're attracted to men who aren't really available and aren't that interested in you, and so you're setting yourself up for abandonment before you even begin. So you're living out this cycle of abandonment over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well, how do I get over that? Like, I don't want to.
God, that's the big question. Those changes happen so subtly on such a deep level. It's not.
Lisa's decided she can't.
Like bang a hammer on it. I mean, no, I've decided they don't end. I just have to deal with it.
Well, talking about the fact that one of the things you need to do is not go out with guys you're super super attracted to.
Right. Because if you're the medium level.
Yeah. If your compass is broken.
He's the greatest guy you've ever met, run.
Bad, yes. But if a guy's about a four, then you might have something workable. You got to make sure it's a guy who's aware of these things too, and that you're can sort of sure it's not somebody who's pretending to be a four, or actually a four,
right,
in terms of your attractiveness. And realize this comes from an unhealthy place. It really does. You're not going to have happiness in a relationship.
And you're actually not a victim of these guys. You're actually participating in that's the biggest thing you have to understand is that you're participating in this dynamic.
You're choosing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I wasn't like this before. Like,
I refuse to accept.
Well, you weren't dating before.
Well, I mean,
didn't start dating.
And the reason you didn't date because you were fearful of experiencing these sorts of things.
Exact abandonments. You knew they were going to happen. Now you're living it out.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a really annoying thing. Let me tell you, it can last for a long time. This pattern, it's annoying. It's annoying. You're just starting to see it. But
do you think? Let's think about it. Break it down for a second. So much of this is about sex and attraction.
Right.
Is that what's driving this? Is that what makes it so?
Is it the same thing that makes that guy have a foot fetish? That was what we were talking to before.
Yes. Guys we know are just overwhelmed by their
so
drives.
So you have one feeling and you've bandied on this sexuality to this one experience.
But is that where the drive comes from? You know what I'm saying? Because it's such a drive.
It is. It's a drive. Yeah, it is a sex drive.
And so that's where
it comes from.
But
who else do you want to be in a relationship with? You want to be in a relationship with the person you want to have sex with.
Right.
Or else they'll be your friend.
I wonder if there's another way to sort of cultivate attraction, you know, some other kind of, if you really were honest about it being a sexual thing, is there something more you could find in somebody to make you sexually appealing?
Well,
or does it have to be the craziness?
But, you can go, okay, well, I'm not going to go for that look.
Find a guy.
You'll still find that guy. Yeah, my guy, he's never looked the same twice. I've had so many different forms of him. But he's the same guy.
We need to write a book together. You need to come out with like a lecture series on this. If we get an answer. I actually sat down with somebody tried to figure this out once because I wanted to write a book similar to this. And I was thinking, well, I was thinking we had to have like a number, a scale, and if you could match this scale up to that scale, but you can't.
It's such a deep impulse that I think only if you change something, and you can't change it from the outside. It has to be just you live your life a certain way, and something shifts.
Yes, that's correct.
And that's what I've been waiting. I'm waiting on it.
Mickey, what's up? Mickey.
Hello.
Oh, hey. I'm sorry.
What's up?
Well, my question is, hi, Lisa, and hi, Drew.
Hi.
Thank you.
My boyfriend thinks I'm really selfish.
Are you?
And it's, I don't really consider myself to be really selfish. I actually think I'm pretty, empathetic and kind of sweet. But, I don't know if I'm just totally off, but, I see his point. He talks to me, and he tells me what he sees I'm being selfish about, and I'm like, I see it. And
give us an example.
Okay. For example, and these are really minor things. And okay, I'll just go ahead and say it.
Please.
Today we were watching a movie together, and he handed me this box, right? And he thinks I mishandled it. And I look at him, and I'm like, what? And he's like, you know what? Just forget it. And
that you mishandled his box?
It's a DVD box. And he thinks I was way off and just...
Way off how? Did you throw it?
Well, I held it in a weird manner. It was a brand new DVD box.
Or did you not follow some instructions that he had given you explicitly?
Well, I kind of grabbed it from him in probably a manner that he didn't think was appropriate.
Maybe you're too aggressive in certain... In certain situations.
Or maybe he's just nitpicking.
Yeah, you see, it goes back to before when our relationship first started, he didn't let me know when things bothered him.
Mm-mm-mm.
And now he switched to... He's letting me know when everything bothers him.
Well, here's the thing. I suspect you probably do have a little bit of a sort of a narcissistic impulse where... Although you're capable of being empathic, you don't routinely let other people's stuff in, and maybe even have some attentional stuff, attention deficit disorders. You don't notice things quite as well as you should. Pay attention.
I think there's something else going on.
He's sort of being a little bit crazy with this, too. So he's going to dump everything on you now that he's found he can be open and honest with you. But if you're like this guy, there's something that can be worked out. So just keep going. We got to take another break. We'll be right back.
Hello. This is your radio. Loveline will be right back.
Everybody, here we are. We're talking about night terrors and all this. And I didn't mention the fact that the freeze response, if you've been traumatized, is also part of night terrors. That you just sort of get this what's called a parasympathetic hyperinhibition, where you just are frozen. And that's why victimizers know you can do, and that's why they come after you, because then you'll freeze and you make a victim. Then.
That's why children, for example, who've been molested will get molested again.
Again and again. Also, they kind of participate in it. Again, that whole issue of being attracted to the traumatizing people. So anyway, enough. We're out of time tonight. Lisa and I are going to write a book. You can read about it later. We're going As soon as she figures out a practical solution to all these problems without expensive therapy, we're in. We're writing a damn book. You can see her on Fox at 9 p.m. on House. She plays Dr. Lisa Cuddy. Thank you, Lisa, for joining us again.
Thank you so much.
Soon. And until next time, this is Dr. Drew saying, and we have, let's see, who's coming up next week? We got Josh Myers from That 70s Show, Eric Balfour from Conviction, John from System of a Down, Christian Finnegan from, of course, VH1 Best Week Ever. And until I see you guys next week, it's Dr. Drew saying good night and stay well.
This has been Loveline. Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Annie Golden. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.